Hello everyone, welcome to another episode of the Cyber Security Recruiter Podcast. I'm here today with Jamie. Jamie, how are you doing?
I am well, thank you for having me.
Good, thanks for coming on. I'm excited to have another recruiter on the show. I don't know how many releases we've done now, but it's a lot, and you're probably like the third or fourth recruiter I've had on, and it's good, and it's an interesting market at the minute. So I think me and you having a good old chat about the wonderful world of recruitment will hopefully be helpful to the listeners.
Hopefully. If not, I'm just excited to chat with Tom. I love hearing Tom's voice.
Yeah, it's nice to see you. We initially connected. I know we were just talking about 2022. I reckon that's when we actually first connected, I think. It was a while back, wasn't it?
Before that. Yeah, it's been a long time.
Yeah, it has, but it's nice to see you. And for the listeners that don't know you, I'm just going to do you a bit of an intro. Jamie Hastings started off as a teacher back in the day in 2015, a couple of different schools. You did that for around 4 or 5 years. You were then in insurance, and then you entered into recruitment, and you were at First Information Technology Services. You started off as a office manager, then you progressed on to a lead recruiter, then you progressed on again to director of people. And about a year ago, you joined Clarity as a senior technical recruiter. So Jamie, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So yeah, cool. So I'll start off, Jamie, where I always start. I know I've done like a little bit of an intro, but I never think I can do it as well as you. So it'd be nice to hear what you get up to, what have you been up to professionally, what's like the recruiting world like for you, and yeah, just what's going on.
Sure. So thank you again for the wonderful introduction. I was taking notes a little bit because you read my resume better than I do. So I did go to school for elementary education, mostly because I didn't really know what I wanted to do with my life, and I still don't. But decided that teaching just wasn't really for me. As soon as we decide that's not it, I get to have this broad, huge world of whatever I want to do. And learning about insurance seemed interesting, and it was a great opportunity. So I started doing that. And little did I know that kind of customer service position was going to morph into more of a sales position. And I realized if you can sell insurance, you can sell just about anything. So I kept that skill and then started over at Fitz, and they're a boutique information security consulting firm. And I started just as an office manager, and I would just fill in the gaps and do things as they needed to be done. And one of the gaps that I identified was they didn't have anybody doing recruiting. Like they were working with third-party agencies, but there was always a disconnect between the candidates that were submitted and like what they were looking for. And as I started inserting myself more into the process, I first just started coordinating the interviews and everything. And then it became a challenge as our folks got busier to try to find time on their calendars for them to do the interviews and screens and stuff. And I just decided I might as well do it just to take the load off somebody else's plate. Started doing screens. And before I knew it, I was responsible for recruiting for the entire company as the only recruiter there. So that was a terrific learning opportunity, to say the least. Took it as I was, you always keep your options open. And as I'm exploring other job opportunities, all these recruiters are like, do you have experience with an applicant tracking system? And I would say, I built one myself using Excel and OneNote, and that's been working for me coming at all, and didn't realize like how much work it actually entails. And grew out of that and realized, oh, I can join a team of other recruiters here at Clarity. And so that's what I've been doing. And for the last year, I've learned a ton, because all of these other folks on my team, they have such varied backgrounds and such different insight. And they actually learned how to do this the right way instead of just figuring it out themselves. So it's been great. And I'm learning every day, learning from you, learning from everybody. So.
Cool, Jamie. Yeah, no. So nice to maybe get a bit of structure to your recruitment bit. Being around, like, are you remote all the time? Yeah, I'm remote all the time. But I know what you mean. Being around other recruiters is good. Like, I can remember, like, before the remote days, like, you do learn a lot from being around each other. And also, it's loads of fun. And, like, because I've missed that. I prefer remote, but I do miss those days. But, Jamie, loads to unpack there. So I can remember when I met you at Fitz, and you were doing a lot. Like you say, you were just literally just recruiting just everything for them. And it sounds like that was like you had to teach yourself a lot. You threw yourself in the deep end, but it sounds like looking back, it was a good move in terms of career progression. The insurance stuff sounds pretty cool as well. And I think in this market for candidates, I think the tech market was just so good for so long, and it was almost like too easy, like ridiculous. There's still pockets that are pretty candidate led at the minute. I know, like security cleared and stuff like that. But I think now, like the time candidates need to know how to sell themselves and move forward. What was that insurance actually? Was there anything like in particular that you learned or it taught you, or any aspect of sales that maybe the listeners could learn from you that insurance segment of your career taught you?
Yeah. So my biggest takeaway was honestly just to listen and understand, you know, what the person needs and basically convince them that they need it. If I were to just say, hey, Tom, have you considered an umbrella liability policy, you would probably say, no, what even is that? And I would talk about, do you own a house? Do you have any assets that you would want to protect? Do you drive at night? Because if so, there is a risk of somebody wearing all black steps out in front of your car while you happen to look down to check your phone for directions, and boom. And now all of a sudden they're suing you for everything that you have. And what do you do? And if you have a liability policy for $20 a month, you're protected. And so I'm just, you're welcome to my insurance. But the insurance company will take care of all the legal fees and everything associated with it, so you don't have to worry. And integrating that risk, which bring back my fit stays, and then just basically telling a story of, here's what you've told me, here's what is important to you, and here's how I can relate it back to what you need. That's all there is to it. Mm-hmm. And I do the same thing now with recruiting. I talk to candidates and I'm asking them, what's important to you? What do you look for in a job? What are your priorities? Because at the end of the day, you work for money. Everybody knows that. But there's other things that are important as well. I'm not going to go shovel stables for $500,000 a year by myself. That's just not something that I would be interested in. Yes, the money's there, but there's more to it. And so just listening and understanding what they're looking for, and then providing whatever insight you can to bridge those gaps. Yeah.
Yeah, no, definitely. Thanks, Jamie. And it sounds like you say, some of it sounds simple, but it's not. And so many people just don't do it. And you can
don't listen.
They don't. When I first started doing this pod, I was like, I think this has really helped my active listening skills. Because when you're doing this, you have to listen to what the guests are saying, otherwise the show just would not be done. So you have to listen, and it is a real skill. And I think we can like really relate it to like getting jobs, applying for jobs, certainly in an interview scenario. And I do hear what you're saying. When I'm recruiting, I'm the same. So many recruiters go in and go, I've got this amazing job, it's perfect for you, it's this. But you don't know it is perfect for them unless they've got to tell you what they want first. Exactly. It might not be perfect for them, and it might be miles off, and there's no point even telling them about the role if that's the case. So, yeah, you've got to, like, for everyone listening, you've really got to listen to what an employer's offering, to what they're doing, and then you can find out if you're able to add value. If you're interested in the role and you feel you can add value, you can tailor your words and your sentences in a way to make sure you get into that role and stuff like that. But, yeah, it sounds like that foundational that sales was a nice one for you, Jamie. It stands mm-hmm. you in – if you can sell – I think you'll always be okay.
Exactly.
So, Jamie, I'm going to talk about resume formatting and what you like to see in candidates. Yeah. So, like, someone actually commented on my post about 2 or 3 days ago, and this guy went, it's about time you headhunters started admitting you can't help juniors, you can't help people breaking, you only work at the senior end of the market. And I was thinking, yeah, that's true. So, long-winded way question of me saying, I want to try and help juniors. I want to try and help people breaking in. I want to try and help people applying, because in my day job, I can't. I only operate really at the very senior end of the market. It's the only way that clients pay our fees. So what sort of profiles are you looking for when people are applying? What do you like? What don't you like? Is there anything that annoys you? Any tips for job applicants out there that could get their foot in the door with you or other recruiters like you?
Yeah, absolutely. It depends on the space. I've noticed at FITS, we had commercial customers as opposed to government customers. They didn't have as strict of requirements, especially about years of experience and those kinds of hard qualifications. But in the government contracting space, they are very specific about whether you qualify or you don't. If they require 7 years of experience and you have 6 months and 11 or 6 years and 11 months, it's not going to work. It's not going to fly. And if you are applying to a government contracting job and they list years of experience, and if you don't meet that, like with specific relevant experience, it's probably not worth anybody's time. But if you are, you meet the years of experience, or if you're exploring the commercial space, like the public sector, just setting yourself up for basically showing how you qualify is going to be the key. So I can, and the way that I learned how to write my resume was the first and foremost fit into one page. And that's not the case anymore, but we can go into that. But it was about show how you've added value to your current employer, your previous employers. And yes, while that's important, what I feel like is more important is demonstrating how you're qualified for your next job. So what I always advise folks is to look at their resume and look at the job description that they're applying for as if they were a hiring manager hiring for that position. Like, what would they look for in a candidate? And then tailoring your resume with that mindset rather than what have I done, absent of what they're looking for.
Cool. Yeah, no. And so many people don't do that. They just click, tell themselves they've applied for 100 jobs, hear nothing back, and wonder why, where they'd probably be better off maybe applying for 10, but actually doing it properly. So I'm just going to break it down for the listeners, Jamie. So show how you qualify for the role. Ideally, one page, which you said you're going to elaborate on in a minute because show how you can add value, show how you're qualified for the role you're applying for, print or get the JD, get the job description next to your resume. Once you've done that, think that you are the hiring manager and just think, what would you want to see on that resume? So really putting yourself in the other person's shoes. Yeah,
exactly.
Okay, cool. Tell me about this one page thing then. What's the deal?
Typically, especially if you're applying for a job with more than 5 years of experience, if you try to fit all of that into one page, especially in the technical space, it's just not enough information. It's not. And so I usually say 2 pages is the new ideal. You also don't want to cram it in. Everybody's been through PowerPoint trainings. You don't want to put more than 28 words on a page or something, because it's just, resumes are the same way. Nobody wants to read a wall of text. Make it visually appealing. You don't have to go above and beyond and do graphic design or whatever, but just organize something so that it's nice to look at. And your resume is absolutely the most important deliverable you will ever create. Taking the time to review and revise, and everything must be perfect, and have another set of eyes and then another set of eyes take a look at it, and any spelling errors, any punctuation, we like to have parallel alignment in our bullets, making sure that the tenses of all those things are correct. Like all of those attention to detail things. I always hate when people put attention to detail as a skill, because that means I'm going to nitpick every single thing on their resume. But if they don't say that they're good at attention to detail and they just demonstrate it, then it's like the proof's in the pudding. Let's go. We love this. Any technical job is going to require attention to detail. If you're an engineer and you're doing coding, and you can't get your code to work because you've used quotation marks instead of 2 apostrophes. It's those kind of little tiny nuances that are going to make all the difference. Either works or it doesn't. So just showing that you're capable of, I can create a document that doesn't have any errors. Like, that's beautiful and will absolutely set you apart. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And I really like that your resume is the most important deliverable you'll ever create. And yeah, it's so true. And it's just so worth spending some time on it. So 2 pages, if you're experienced and you're in a technical role, reality is it's probably going to be on 2 pages, which is cool. Make it look appealing. Keep in mind it's the most important deliverable you'll make. Have a fresh set of eyes on it, not just yours, to check for mistakes, attention to detail. Yeah, when you're talking about attention to detail for technical roles, yeah, if there's grammatical errors on there or spelling mistakes, it's not going to help. 2 pages is the new ideal. 28 words on a page, make it appealing. Yeah. Okay, cool, thank you. The most important deliverable you'll ever produce is your resume. So have a fresh set of eyes on it. Attention to detail matters. You can't afford to have any grammatical grammar errors or spelling errors, it's just going to kick you out the process in any market, good or bad. Mm-hmm. So cool. Was that the main points on the resume, yeah. Jamie? Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
And when, if I was applying for a job with you and like I connected with you on LinkedIn and I don't know, sent you a video or a voice note or just hit you up on LinkedIn, like stepping out the process, do you like that sort of thing? Does it frustrate you? What's your feelings on
that? I love it. To be honest, especially at Fit, we relied very heavily on applications. And so I'd review everything and I would look at every single application myself. And that's another thing about Clarity that I love too, is we're all humans looking at resumes and applications. We don't have any AI kind of pre-screening for it. But here at Clarity, we are so overwhelmed with unqualified candidates. I don't know what happened, but the C2C agency market has just been bombarding us with applications. And so realistically, we'll check applications every so often, but 9 times out of 10, we don't really rely on applications. We're more just sourcing for candidates ourselves. We're going out and we're hunting rather than gathering. And so unless somebody alerts me somehow that they've applied, I'm probably not going to see their application. But as soon as I get that note, hey, I just wanted to introduce myself, I applied to this job, that's all it takes. And then I'm going to go find your application. And because you took initiative to follow up, that speaks volumes about you as well. So yeah, good suggestion.
Yeah, no, thanks. And you know what? I really want to focus on this point because it's when I hear you say you're overwhelmed, I know we were just talking about it before we hit record, and it's people just don't realize how busy it is as a recruiter, and everyone can, I don't want to sound rude or anything, but like some candidates I can tell, they feel like I'm just dealing with them. You know, they're mm-hmm. like, they respond and they ping me and I've not come back within the hour and they're wondering what's going on. And it's, look, seriously, like we are grinding. We've got so much on. We're working multiple vacancies. We're doing that. If your agency side, you've got different clients, well, you like your head's spinning. So I think the key word is, like you say, follow up. But and do it in a polite way, because there's a lot going on, Jamie, isn't there? And like I say, it's that traditional application process. It's fascinating to hear that if someone applies through traditional channels, they're probably not going to speak to you. That will shock some people, a lot of people listening. But yeah, so don't be afraid to be, I like to use polite and persistent.
Yes, I love that.
I spoke to a woman, she heads up a talent acquisition team, and she was saying some of her recruiters have got 40, 50 each on their desk. How many, what's the, in a busy time, what are your desks looking like in terms of requirements? Have you got like a lot of volume or?
So volume wise, we've always got hundreds of positions open in the full scope space. So if you have a TSSCI and a full scope, hit me up. But if just generally speaking, we usually have 2 or 3 openings at any given time that we're working in. They're usually pretty similar, a level 2 and a level 3 or something like that. But because we've got such a huge team and such a quick turnaround, we open and close them very quickly one after the other. And so that makes it a lot easier to talk to candidates, but then I can also see the benefit of having multiple recs open in the double digits. And then you get to build a pipeline and kind of diversify your own Rolodex with candidates. And then it's a lot easier to come up with people once the timing's right. And I think that is honestly something that a lot of people don't realize. Like they think that recruiters are only relevant when you're actively in the job market, but that's not the case at all. It's always good to keep your options open, because even if the time isn't right, if you're perfectly happy at your current position and you have no intent of leaving anytime soon, just having that connection and kind of explaining why you love it so much and why you're so happy and what your dream job does look like, if it exists, that recruiter is going to remember and going to have notes on you, and they can call you up and say, hey, your dream job just dropped into my lap and you're first on my list. Let's talk. Mm-hmm. You don't have that introduction or that connection already, and you find yourself in the job market and you're like, crap, I have nobody, like nothing lined up, no irons in the fire. It's just, it's so overwhelming to try to make those connections in such short order, and the timing is more often than not right for the company that you're interested in.
Definitely. Do you know what? As recruiters, Jamie, we get that. We get this long-term relationship game, especially if you're in the same sort of area of tech, whether it's security or whatever it might be, it really pays dividends. And yeah, not everyone thinks that. The other thing that you mentioned there about how making the connections quickly when you need them is really hard. I also think it becomes really disingenuous if you're mm-hmm. only ever reaching out to someone when you want something. Naturally, yes. that person's probably not going to be as responsive, as helpful. Whereas if you've got an established relationship, I think if you've got a really strong network and some good recruiters, some good hiring money, again, you'll always be okay. If you've heard this, we have a little saying like your network is your net worth and stuff like that. It matters so much and you have to give it time. But yeah, Jimmy, I did a post about it. I when you see those profiles, I go, if you're a recruiter, do not contact me and stuff like that. Do you ever see that? Like, yeah. I actually did a post. I was like, people that do that, I actually genuinely worry for them, because whether it's AI, automation, an upmarket, a downmarket, there will be a point where they probably need a recruiter. And if that mm-hmm. is plastered all over your profile, I actually still approach those sorts of people, but it probably puts a lot of people off.
Yes. I'll pass all their profiles to you if I see them.
See, there was a challenge. But yeah, no, cool. Definitely playing that longer term relationship game essentially is going to pay dividends, is what we're saying, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
cool. When it comes to, if we move on to interviewing, any kind of general kind of hints or tips or do's or don'ts or anything you like to see or don't like to see once you pass through the application phase into the interview phase?
Yeah, so I always advise to treat the interview more like a conversation than an interview. If they ask you a question and it doesn't feel right for some reason, ask them how it's relevant, or ask them some kind of follow up and connect those dots for yourself, because interviewing is a two-way street and hindsight's 20/20. So if there's something that you don't like in your current job, ask questions about that to make sure that the grass is not just greener because they have a sewer leak. You want to make sure that you're not going to run into the same problems over and over again. And as much as they're interviewing you, you want to interview them. And the other thing that I see a lot of times is we'll make an introduction and have this big long spiel in the beginning and talk about the reasons that we love the company so much and why we joined and what we're doing here. And then at the end, it's clear that the candidate's reading off their note page and they say, what do you love about this company? Why did you join this company? And it's like, were you listening? So don't make the recruiters repeat themselves just for the sake of repeating themselves. As much as you expect us to be active listening, you've got to do the same thing. But yeah, just keeping a set of what it is you're looking for and then asking questions to make sure and make double sure that this is going to be a good fit for you as much as you're a good fit for them.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, it's such a true point about that. I think that way of thinking where it's like you get interviewed, you answer all the questions, you ask two questions at the end. That's the really old school way of thinking. It mm-hmm. does, like in this day and age, like it needs to be conversational. And it's nice to hear that you like, I know loads of my clients that they say to me, they love a lot of questions. They like mm-hmm. it. Because everyone really wants the same thing. Everyone wants it to be a long-term move. They want the person to genuinely want to stick around. The job for life thing's long gone, but they genuinely want people to stick around for 3, 4, 5 years and really enjoy it. So yeah, making it conversational. And yeah, like I say, they're being interviewed, but yeah, they need to, I think they get more respect from the client if it's that way, and they're semi-interviewing the client as well, don't they?
Yeah, it shows that they're engaged and that they care.
Yeah, definitely. Cool. All right then, Jamie. And is there any, I don't know if you can say or not, is there any like bad interviews you've had and you've just thought, God, I know you mentioned a minute ago about people clearly not listening and stuff like that. Is there any like don'ts or anything that particularly like is a bit of a red flag or anything that people should be aware of not to do or anything?
Where to start? I've had people take, okay, so first and foremost, if you're scheduling a call with a recruiter, show up to the call and don't miss it. And if you do, call them back. I've had people taking my calls in the grocery store or something and you hear the beep of the checkout. And it's at least wait until you're in the car and then you can halfway focus. I don't mind at all when people are chatting with me on their way home from work. That's fine. But just be in a place where you can give me your attention because I'm giving you my full attention. I hate it when I'm trying to ask people questions and they're just, you can tell that they don't really want this job. You're asking about their qualifications, about their experience, and they're just being super short, super just not elaborating on anything, not telling me the story and the context. I love context. I just talked to somebody earlier today where I asked him a question and he went on for 20 minutes just talking about, here's my experience and here's what I've done and here's what I'm looking for. And he was answering my questions before I could even ask them. And he's, I'm sorry, I'm rambling. I said, no, you're doing fine. Like, just keep talking. I love this. And then there's also the folks who just, you can just tell with somebody's vibe. And I know how soft that sounds, but if the vibe isn't vibing, it's not going to vibe.
I know exactly what you mean. And it is nice when people elaborate and explain things, and just the importance of explaining things clearly as well. Like, I've had it with certain candidates from some like really senior roles. And I remember one particular, I'd spoke to this person on multiple occasions, and I was like, I'm still not sure if they can do the job. And I was like, this is bad, because this is like a very senior role. And I was thinking, if they can't articulate themselves to me correctly, and I can't understand, how are they going to do that to a team and stuff like that? So yeah, I think just clear, concise, and be forthcoming. It sounds like you had a decent candidate. Was this today?
Mm-hmm.
This
call? Yeah.
I can tell the way you are. You're like, yeah, it sounds like you energized you quite a bit.
Yeah, it was a good call. And another example of just being proactive, because he wasn't actively looking. He's a referral. And it was, because I'm super happy at my job, but like anybody, I like to keep my options open because you never know when something happens. Or just having this network of people is always good, because maybe he knows somebody who is looking for a job and who's qualified for what I'm looking for, and he can connect those dots. That's what I consider myself, honestly, is just a dot connector. That's the value that I bring. But yeah, having that energy and just being open. And I think that goes back to our active listening theme of just trying to understand what it is the person's looking for and what's going to make them happy, and then just following through.
I'll keep a lookout for your new job title, Doc Jamie, Professional Dot Connector.
Oh, yeah. Maybe that should be my new tagline.
Yeah, no, that's interesting as well. Yeah, referrals are always wicked. The passive people, it's funny when I hear you talking, and like, we're talking about referrals being amazing, the passive people being the best. We're talking about, you love it when people hit you up on LinkedIn and step outside the channels. I've been like thinking job adverts are dead for ages. I never use them. LinkedIn sales rep talked me into one about 3 months ago, and I used one and I was so unimpressed. It was like a network security engineer role. And the final straw was when a librarian applied. And it was just like, no, this is like just such a bad ROI on my time. So when you actually stop and think, it's almost like the traditional channels, I think, especially in this market, because there's a lot of candidates on the market in the commercial. I know in security, clearly, it's just always candidate led. We do some stuff in that space. But in the commercial world, it's like those traditional channels, they're almost like dead for the time being, aren't they? I think for people listening.
Yeah. And I think the worst advice that I've ever heard anyone say, tying back to the resume advice, was, oh, if you're on Indeed, you just export your resume that you've plugged into there, and then you can just use that as your resume. That is the worst thing you could do. No,
I know. How not to get a job. Yeah, don't just copy and paste your resume. If you just click and there's no personalization there and no effort or anything like that. I did a pod recently, Jamie, with a guy who'd come out of the army, and he'd basically got straight into this security company and done really well, progressed right up to COO. He's absolutely smashed it.
Wow.
And he told me about his journey, and he did a lot of the things that we're basically advocating for. Like, he turned up to an office, met this person in person. Before that, he'd called the owner of the company. It's only a 20 person company, so there was no like internal tip function or anything like that. So he'd gone straight, and it was just completely stepped out of the traditional way of applying for a job, and they loved it. And he worked out, how can I add value to them, and this, that, and the other. And I think this is what people have got to realize. It's too easy to sit behind a screen and complain that no one's coming back to you, but if you are just clicking apply and sending the same resume out to every company, it's probably not going to happen, is it? I think you'd be lucky if it did happen, wouldn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And I keep trying to tell myself that too, because I fall into the same trap of, I just send an email and I say, if they're interested in getting a job, they'll get back to me. But that's not always the case, because I myself have ADHD. Everybody else probably does too, a little bit. So You see something and you get distracted and it's gone. And just having that follow up, even if it's just, hey, is this something that you'd be interested in? If not, great. Just let me know. That's the key. And I think just a quick response, it doesn't have to be this huge thought out essay of why or why not. I'm not looking. Just a quick, yeah, I'd be interested. I'm just busy right now. Please hit me up in a week or hit me up in another couple of months is so much better than just ignoring.
Yeah. it's a small community. Always mm-hmm. comes back round. And it's just also as well, because recruitment is so like cyclical and up and down, it's either really client led or really candidate led, and it'll always be in cycles for probably till the end of time. So there'll always be a time when it comes back round. So you're right, it's just like doing the right thing. Plus it's just it's nice to be nice.
Yeah, and it's free too.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, so you mentioned there when you're reaching out to people, I say it to the team here, slow down to speed up. If you just do it properly, like if you're going to reach out to 100 people, like so just reach out to 50 and make sure everything's personalized. It just, I think since AI and automation, I don't know about you, but I'm on the lookout for anything in my inbox. I'm like, is this automated? Is this a human or is this a robot? Mm-hmm. Like everything, I'm just like double checking everything. So I think that importance around personalization is probably amplified since AI came on the scene. So it's just, there's a lot of value now in just taking a bit of time, isn't there?
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I am always going to advocate for AI, but not 100%, right? You kind of use AI as a crutch, but not your full wheelchair. You can plug things in and you can say, how would you phrase that? And then you take what ChatGPT or whatever says and you make it your own. That's the key, is to put your own human self back into it, whatever it spits out, and don't just send whatever AI deems appropriate.
Have you seen the messages that LinkedIn writes out?
I have.
They are horrific, aren't they?
Yes.
The worst thing, listen to this, the worst thing happened to me recently. I was on someone's profile. I accidentally clicked the wrong button and I was like, oh no, this candidate's going to think I'm an absolute idiot because I basically just sent the AI message that LinkedIn wrote by accident. But yeah, they're so long-winded, they're so wordy. They're just awful, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. They're terrible. And you can tell.
They're bad. But yeah, I think on the AI thing, I always end up talking about this now on shows because it's like a hot bit of topic at the minute, obviously. But I think it'll just help us. Like the stuff that me and you are good at, Jamie, is like this, what we're doing now. Like that conversation you had earlier today with that candidate, like as a good technical recruiter, that is where you mentioned connecting the dots. That's ultimately where we add value. And that's probably mm-hmm. where me and you are having the most fun. So I think if AI can take away some of these other boring, mundane things that every recruiter hates doing, I think we could actually just start really getting efficient as recruiters. And I could just imagine this world in like maybe 4 or 5 years time where we just get up and there's loads of automation around and we could just get up and just speak. And that's all we do. We just get up and just have 8, 9, 10 mega conversations with no typing in between. It's just all done for us. That would be good fun, wouldn't it?
Oh, that would. Yeah. We can dream.
We'll get there. I'm jumping about here. So I always do this. I have a little plan for our show and I'm all over the place. But communication, we've talked about it a bit. We mentioned it a bit from when you were talking about your insurance stuff. It's mm-hmm. what are your thoughts on communication and how can technical folks, some are, but not all are great with communication skills. They probably feel like it's a bit of a blind spot for the guys and girls out there. What's your any tips for the listeners that want to refine and enhance their communication but haven't been able to do so yet?
Do it more.
Okay.
Honestly, just practice. Especially when I was starting to sell insurance, we had to do cold calling. And there is nothing that terrifies me more or gives me more anxiety than the idea of calling somebody up and disturbing them out of whatever they're doing to ask them if they want insurance. So it took me so long to just get over that fear. And my old boss would always say, just get them on the horn. Start asking a question. It's nope, just get them on the horn. Just talk to them. Just call them. And so now that's my default. If I'm struggling to articulate a question over Slack or something, just get them on the horn, get them on a huddle and have that synchronous conversation with a person and just do it over and over. And before you know it, you'll get better. Like just with practice, you'll get better whether you're trying to or not. And the other thing that I'll say too is assuming positive intent. Like it's so often that you get yourself spun up and you're like, man, if I ask this question to this person, they're going to think XYZ of me. Don't think for the person and just assume that they're going to receive you well and that they want to help and just ask for the help. Just ask the question and then listen to their answer.
Yeah, don't forget to listen to the answer.
Yeah, that's cool. The idea is you want to hear what the other person is saying, because another thing that happens, especially in a relationship where you haven't built that background trust with a person, you ask them a question and while they're responding, you're not really listening to their response. You're just thinking of the next thing you're going to ask. You're just thinking of what you're going to say next, and it may or may not align with what they've just responded. And assuming positive intent just helps with all that.
It do you know what, Jamie? It does. And it's like, I know we talked about it at the top of the show about just listening, and it is such a skill. And I see it even all the time on, especially with like newer clients, because there's less trust with newer clients. When they actually hear that you've listened and understood them, it's like they're just so grateful, and it does install trust. It builds rapport. It strengthens the relationship. It does so much. Like, the listening skills are just so important. I don't know if you get this, but you get it in like your social circles and your personal, and you'll say something and like one of your mates isn't listening to you, and it's just so annoying. Like, it's just so annoying. Like, when people listen, it really means a lot. It really does. People should really work on it. So get them on the horn. I like that. Get them on the horn. Assume positive intent. Yeah, don't think for the person. Essentially, don't overthink it. Just do it. Asking for help, that's a really good one, because a natural human reaction to another human when they ask for help is to help. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, just really listening to what the other person's saying. That sounds like we've nailed it there, Jamie, in the communication. Any other little tips? There's loads there, but I'm just checking.
I know. One of the early tips for me was to summarize what the person said, rephrase what you just did, just to demonstrate that you've comprehended what they've said and show them that they're listening, or that you're listening. But yeah, just practicing. And I felt nervous coming into doing phone screens at this company. But once I practiced, and once I had a couple and kind of knew what I was going to say and had an outline and prepared myself for the call and figured out what information I needed after it from the beginning, then it was a lot easier for me to listen, because I wasn't spending my brain RAM thinking of trying to remember all the things. I just have it right in front of me. So preparation too.
Yeah, definitely. Preparation and practice is a massive one. It's like even doing this podcast. It's like doing LinkedIn Lives used to absolutely petrify me. Like, one of the software buckled on me once, and it just made me look, I just got really het up and stuff like that. But the point I'm making here is the practice thing, it's so true, because I find like when you're doing the podcast, when you get back on a candidate call, it just seems so easy because you've just bloody done a podcast. So if you can exercise these muscles, I used to find with the LinkedIn Lives, I come off a LinkedIn Live, I'd do a client call, I wouldn't even be nervous at all because I've just done a LinkedIn Live with loads of people on there. Or I think if you can push yourself into these situations, whether it's communication, whatever it might be, and like I say, get yourself out of your comfort zone, I think other things in life do become easier. And the more you do it, the more you exercise that muscle, the more you find it's actually good fun. And when you feel nervous at the start, you always feel great after you've done that thing, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, can't even tell you how nervous I was to come on here right now.
Listen, I can't tell at all. You're doing a great job. So cool. All right, Jamie. So we're getting towards the end here. So we're just going to talk about podcasts or books, or I used to just say like any books, but it could be a book, it could be a podcast, it could be content you're consuming online. Is there anything out there at the minute that you're tapping into that could help the listeners in their career growth and self-development journeys and stuff like that?
Oof, as cheesy as it sounds, I got so much value from just your standard leadership books. There's Dale Carnegie's How to Make Friends and Influence People. There's a reason that it's still relevant, and it was written in like the 30s. So good. These concepts have not changed, and it's just so eye-opening to see all these things that you thought you knew just written in a book. All of these concepts, like, it's okay to be wrong, and it's okay for someone else to be wrong and for you not to correct them. It's fine. You can just, and that way you're still building trust with the person, because as soon as you tell them that they're wrong, you get them on the defensive, and you can almost like early 2000s playing The Sims. You see that little button pop above their head with the minus sign, and you're like, But yeah, so how to win friends and influence people. I've also read The Speed of Trust, which has a lot of those same how to build trust quickly. And really, the bottom line is to, if you say you're going to do something, do it. And it's just that easy. Yeah.
Yeah. The thing is, again, it sounds simple, Jimmy, but there's so many people that just don't. But yeah, for everyone listening, how to win friends and influence people, I think Warren Buffett used to keep that in the top drawer of his desk and read it once a month or something like that. I think I've lost the copy I have, but I had a copy and I'd highlighted bits. And I could just literally skim back through my highlighted bits, and I could do it in about 25, 30 minutes. So I could just like keep it really refreshed. But it is a great one for anyone listening that's serious about improving communication. It's a really good one.
It's short. That's the other bonus.
And it's stuff you can implement straight away. Like you can be, if you're on holiday reading it by the pool or something, you could actually just practice some of the techniques straight away. But what's the other one? Speed of Trust, the other one you said, yeah?
Yeah. And Stephen Covey, the one who wrote Seven Habits, it's actually written by his son, who's also named Stephen Covey, but different middle initial. I don't remember what it is. But
okay, cool. Okay, how to make friends and influence people, and Speed of Trust. That thing as well, like you meant, I think you used the word like kill the vibe earlier. That thing where, if you just correct someone, when I've had someone, it's like, oh, it does just kill the vibe. But I actually might go back. I might go back to that book. It's a good book, that How to Make Friends. It's a really good one. It's a good one. Cool. All right then, Jamie. So yeah, I think as we come to the end here, I think we've covered everyone. It's a tough market out there for people at the minute, isn't it? And it's just trying nice to, let's say, I can't help the juniors in my day job, and I can't really help. As recruiters, I feel like there is only, if you're doing similar to like what we do, like proactive, like you're doing outbound stuff, like out there, essentially headhunt. That's what we're doing. And it's, we can only help a small fraction of people in reality, because there's not that many. We're targeting a small section of people. Is there anything else, Jamie, any final thoughts for like people out there on the market that are struggling, that could help them get their foot in the door or break in or anything like that?
If you're trying to date, it helps to be on the dating profiles, helps to be on the dating sites. So yes, beefing up your LinkedIn with as much information as you can provide, and as much, make it as relevant as possible, so that when recruiters are searching and sourcing for these positions, they can find you. Like I run into it so often where you do a search and it's the same several people who are always popping up in the beginning, and it's because they have their keywords just completely littered throughout and you just know to skip over those. But then it's the folks that we find through other avenues, and then it's so hard for me to go back and try to find them again just because they have nothing really in their profile. They applied a different way or something like that. I'm like, did you want to be found, actually? Making yourself as findable as possible. Yeah.
No, definitely. And it's true. Even stuff like, you see some profiles, there's not a picture on there, there's this, that. And yeah, it definitely, the better the LinkedIn profile, I think the easier it is for the candidate or for the recruiter. I know from being active on LinkedIn, it's just so easy to connect with people because I think they see it's a real person. I think sometimes it's a fake profile. And I've actually heard some horror stories from bigger agencies having loads of fake profiles and stuff like that. So I think people are on the lookout for it. But
I know there's a lot of people who are just fundamentally against social media, which that's fine. But also you have to understand this is where the recruiters are hunting. And if you're not on it, if you're not involved, you're going to be left out.
You are, but you know what people do? There's a guy up in New York, he owns a Hackins pen testing company, and he was like dead against it. And he's just completely flicked. He's on LinkedIn now and he's the most active guy. Like, I've seen him, but I can't believe he's gone full circle. So I think people are coming around. But like you talked about your like resume being the most important deliverable. LinkedIn's your 3D resume. If you're on there and you're active and you're doing stuff and you're speaking at security events and stuff like that, it helps other people learn, it helps the juniors come through, and it helps the person in question as well's overall progression. But yeah, get on LinkedIn so me and Jamie can find you easier.
Exactly.
So cool. All right, Jamie, I think we've nailed it.
Yeah, I think so.
Cool. Jamie, thank you for your time. Nice to see you. Lots of tips in here for people on the market. I think to have two recruiters speaking, it's more interesting than we think sometimes. Like people like to hear what it's like from this side and how to do things differently. So I know you're busy. Thanks for your time, Jamie, and I'll see you soon.
Thank you, Tom.